Good afternoon. Today we have the first installment of the Shawnmo Hoops Pod, which is a basketball-centric podcast. Today focusing on mostly high school recruiting with some NBA and college basketball tidbits. And for the first guest, we have Ricky O'Donnell from Chicago. Ricky writes for SB Nation and is the College Hoops editor. And based on his Twitter bio, an NBA assignment editor, and also Chicago Bulls agitator. So I would like to welcome Ricky O'Donnell.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean.
One thing I had Ricky on to discuss 2 weeks ago, we were both at the USA Basketball mini camp held in Colorado Springs, which is held over a 2 day period and usually features most of the best high school players across a variety of classes. And both of us were in attendance and got to watch mostly 4-star and 5-star players over the course of the weekend. And the other day, Ricky wrote a fascinating article on Zion Williamson, social media legend and the number 2 ranked player in his high school class by Scout. And Ricky wrote an article titled, "Never Seen Anyone Like Zion Williamson, But Will His Game Work in the NBA?" And just before I kind of kick it over to Ricky, Zion Williamson, for anybody that doesn't know, is basically a 6'6", 272-pound, as Ricky described, a wrecking ball, with some of the most explosive leaping ability you'll kind of see. And Zion has been kind of a social media legend, but here he was in Colorado Springs getting to compete, against the best players, where his weaknesses were identified, as were his strengths. But Ricky wrote a fascinating article, so first I just wanted to kind of touch on your thoughts on Zion from that weekend, and in terms of kind of the main message that you got across in your article as well.
Cool. Yeah, I had not seen Zion before. So part of the reason I wanted to go out to USA Basketball Camp, this is the third year in a row I've covered it. It's always one of my favorite events to cover, but I really wanted to see him more than anyone else just because, he was hurt in the spring on AAU. I actually saw the Nike and Under Armour leagues on the grassroots circuit this year, but I didn't see the Adidas League, which is where Zion played. So I had not actually got a chance to watch him before. And I thought that it would be a cool environment because, so much of the sort of narrative around Zion focuses on the scene he creates, the frenzy he creates. I think the game against LaMelo Ball in Las Vegas when LeBron couldn't even get into the gym, and it was basically a fire
Right.
hazard. The gym was so overpacked. I think that's probably the best distillation of it. But then, there's other things like, the mixtapes and the million Instagram followers and the friendship with Drake. So obviously, I mean, Zion's a social media sensation,
The
100%.
Sports Center top 10 highlights.
Yeah, absolutely. But I thought that this would be cool because there would be no frenzy around it, right? No hype, just hoops.
Right. So what I guess, from your first impression, since you had obviously seen the highlights, but in terms of, seeing him in this environment, how did he come out compared to what you were thinking going into the event?
I think that the one problem with it was Zion going up against his 2019 and 20 high school classes.
Right.
Those kids had no prayer against him because he's just so physically developed. I mean, he has grown man strength for sure. Basically, if you want his physical dimensions, he's like Jadeveon Clowney, who's able to do 360 windmill dunks. I mean, that's what he looks like. Clowney was a man amongst boys at the college football level. Now imagine Zion going against high school freshmen. So it was, I mean, in that sense, it wasn't, I don't think, maybe the best test for him, but I did think it was cool when he got to play with the other kids who were his peers in the class of 2018, just to sort of see how he works when the whole offense isn't geared around Zion. He was sharing the floor. Well, usually he was on opposite teams with Cam Reddish, I feel like, but he was sharing the floor with some of the other best players in the country. And I did think we got to learn a lot about him. The first thing that really jumped out, I mean, he was listed at 230 coming into the event, and then he measures at 272, right? Like,
Right, quite the jump.
if you just look at him one time, he's not 230. Like, I would describe him as a refrigerator with wings. Like, he's like the widest human being I've ever seen in my life. So he doesn't look like he's in great shape, but I thought he played harder than anyone there throughout the duration of the scrimmages. And, in that high altitude in Colorado, that's got to be difficult. And those were long, long, intense practices, for the most part. So I thought, I was really impressed by Zion's motor. the fact that he was able to, you know, rebound and block shots and play so hard, you know, obviously the majority of his offense is, you know, taking it to the hole, driving left. He's a lefty. So I thought that that was very impressive. And I also thought that it was interesting to see him sort of handle the ball a little bit. I asked him what position he sees himself as. And he said point forward, which is a very high school thing to say. I feel like all these guys just want the ball in their hands when you're a star like that. But he's a pretty good passer. I was asking people who he reminds them of. And people were saying Charles Barkley. Draft Express guy said he's got a little Draymond in him. I kind of think Blake Griffin would be the guy who he reminds me of. He's shorter than Griffin for sure. But Griffin's like sneaky good as a ball handler and passer. And I kind of think Zion is too, or at least he showed enough at this stage of his career where I think he could potentially develop it. So in general, I was pretty impressed with Zion. I think he's a fascinating prospect attraction. Really, he's one of the most unique guys we've seen at this level in a long time, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on his motor, and you know, I think that was one thing I was curious about because he's kind of been, you know, basically given his own AAU team and has been the focal point, whether it's high school or AAU, basically wherever he goes, and he can pretty much do whatever he wants. But you know, at the USA camp, it, for the most part, it's kind of put your ego aside, and everybody's there to play basketball. And the fact that, you know, he did that, and you know, while he was going against, you know, some of the top players in his class, he was able to fit in and kind of put his ego aside. So I definitely thought that was good. You know, in terms of his overall game, you know, one thing that kind of stuck out to me, he's playing against the best of the best in terms of his class. Obviously, was going against some of the younger guys, but anytime he wanted to drive to the basket, he got to the basket, which when you can, you know, still do that one thing against some of the top players was pretty impressive. Now, obviously, in a year in the NBA and you have DeAndre Jordan and the Greek Freak and all these other people, it's not going to be quite as easy, which is where his shot will have to improve. But, you know, in terms of just being able to use that shoulder and kind of, you know, get by people at will, was pretty impressive to see in person. You know, one other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, also talking to him, he was very articulate, and he had, like, no ego about him whatsoever. He gave great answers to all my questions. He was really thoughtful. I asked him if he felt like he had a lot to prove coming here, and that was the first question I had. He was like, you know, I'm going to say a little yes, a little no, and he went into it on both sides, and he was just, like, he was a really nice kid. First of all, he was articulate. He was thoughtful. So I think, you know, people are going to love Zion Williamson. There's no doubt he's going to rule in college, right? Like, if you're using him as a small ball five in college, like, dear God, that's going to be awesome. Hopefully, it seems like he's going to go to Kentucky. And Kentucky's always overloaded with big men. So I do worry about the fit there a little bit. Like, to me, so what the way Zion was playing a lot in this practice was he was, like, setting hard screens and then diving to the basket. Or he was, you know, standing off to the wing and then, you know, driving or handling the ball a little bit from there. So, you know, to me, it's all about the stars always get so much attention, but like they really need to be surrounded with the right kind of role players to maximize their success at any level of basketball. And I think Zion's going to be a fascinating test case in that because, you know, if I'm Zion, I wouldn't want to go to a Kentucky team that's got a ton of big men in the front court and like they never have any
shooters.
You know what I mean? Like, I want to be the four or and then the five in the super small ball lineups, surrounded by shooters, and then I want to handle the ball, kind of playing like the way the Sixers are playing Ben Simmons at center at times. So it'll be interesting with Zion, you know? If he goes to Kentucky, is he a three starting next to Sasha Killia Jones and Wenyen Gabriel or something, you know, like, or Nick Richards? And, you know, you don't know which of those guys will be back next year. But again, it just makes him even more fascinating to talk about and think about, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll definitely be fascinating to see where he ends up. You know, obviously Kentucky, I'm sure, is the leader just given their propensity to get one and done players. But it'll be interesting to see where he goes and see the pieces that are around him. You know, I think one thing that you touched on in your article and to me was probably one of the I won't say the best moments of camp, but definitely the one that if you were, you know, starting to get a little tired, this snapped you to attention, but the one that went viral pretty quickly after when he, you know, pinned the shot on the glass with I don't know if it was one hand or two hand, but he pinned it, ran down the court, got the ball back and just, you know, made a beeline to the hoop with a powerful dunk. And that just kind of in that, you know, one instance kind of showed the power and athleticism that he does have on both sides of the basketball.
Yeah, that was the play where when I saw that, I'm like, oh, that's the lead of my story. Now you know it when you see it.
Well, all right, in terms of, you know, Zion, obviously him trying to get to play against some of the best players, but in terms of the rising senior class, you know, there was about 18 players that were more or less trying out for the Nike Hoop Summit that'll take place in April in Portland against some of the top international players. But who are some of the other people that kind of jumped out to you or really impressed you while at Colorado Springs?
Sure. I really need to pull up the roster because I don't have the roster in front of me right now, but definitely the first guy who jumps out to me is Cam Reddish. I think Cam Reddish is awesome. I'm going to write an article about him for this upcoming week. To me, he's sort of like, if you wanted to make an NBA wing in the lab, you'd sort of make him like Cam Reddish. But, you know, the push and pull with that is like, it's only true when everything's clicking. I think he only shot 40% in the EYBL. He hasn't always been the most efficient scorer, but I mean, physically, he's got it all. He's 6'8", 7'2", wingspan. He can shoot it, you know, score from all three levels. He can definitely shoot it from three-point range. He has a little bit of a janky shot, but I think it's a good shot. I have more faith in Cam Reddish as a shooter than most of those guys that were there, that's for sure. And he's an athlete, too. So, I mean, you know, there was a reason Cam Reddish was spotted having lunch with LeBron and
right.
Rich Paul. In, you know, over the summer, I asked him about that. He even talked to him about me. Shocking, I know, after this FBI investigation.
Yeah, it's very shocking.
But you know, there's a reason they're taking an interest in him. It's because, like, he's totally going to be a top five pick. I mean, he could go. So if that draft will be him, Zion, and RJ Barrett. Like, I mean, he could go,
right.
You know, top three, you would think, in that draft for sure. So he was really, really impressive to me, and he's the first name that comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing with him, you know, so he's been at these USA camps since even before he played his first varsity game. So going back to October 2014, kind of the same instance when they had freshmen, sophomores, and then seniors. And at that camp, he measured a shade under 6'4", with shoes, 6'8" wingspan, and 177 pounds. And you know, 3 years later, he's measuring 6'7", 6'8". 7'1" wingspan, 211 pounds. So, you know, you kind of can really see the course of just his physical growth. You know, one thing for him also, I remember, so he first played at USA October 2014, and then after his freshman year, he was back in May trying out for the USA under 16 team, and he got cut, and I don't even think he made it through the first round of cuts. And it wasn't that surprising at the time. I mean, you could really see at that point in time, I'd say he was more of a jump shooter. So I know you mentioned his shot, and I think there's a few things with his form that could use a little fixing, but I really like him as a shooter. But, you know, he wasn't really aggressive at all. And a lot of that was due to his size and kind of personality, and to really see that blossom over the years where, you know, he's basically calling for the ball on the wing, and he'll go left or right and get to the basket in two dribbles. So I definitely agree with you on Reddish. And I think, you know, in terms of him going to Duke and basically being their small ball four, so kind of following in the footsteps of a Jabari or Ingram or Tatum and kind of having that offensive mismatch really every game, you know, playing on the perimeter against probably a slower, less agile defender, that he's going to have really a fantastic year and will definitely put himself, you know, in contention to be number one pick when he comes out.
Yeah, him and because RJ Barrett he seems likely to go there. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe he ends up at Oregon or somewhere else, but that'll be interesting because it would seem like those are the two most NBA ready-made players in the class.
Yep.
I know, you know, Barrett definitely wants the ball in his hands. He's basically playing point guard. I wonder if point guard is Barrett's long-term position, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be, you know, two guys that kind of want the ball in their hands.
Exactly.
You know, both can handle the ball. So that, you know, that'll be interesting if they both end up at Duke. You know, one thing for Reddish, I know in high school he's played with Bamba and Brandon Randolph from Arizona. And basically they had him playing point guard since his sophomore year. And, you know, the guy's never been a point guard, but in terms of it probably helping his development, has definitely definitely kind of a good thing for the long run. You know, when I was able to see him, you know, play in college, or sorry, play in high school. But in terms of the 2018 class, so one thing a lot of people were talking about in Colorado was kind of the point guard play. And there was kind of four of the top point guards there. So Emmanuel Quickley going to Kentucky, Trey Jones, Tyus Jones' little brother, going to Duke, Darius Garland, and then Javon Quinterly, who just decommitted from Arizona and has obviously been kind of caught up in the FBI scandal. But, you know, I think it kind of really differs depending on who you talk to and when you talk to about, you know, who's the best point guard in the class. So I was just kind of curious if you had any favorites out of those four players and kind of how you saw them kind of projecting down the road.
Yeah, it's weird because I usually, despite the fact that I cover college basketball, I tend to think about it more long term than just, you know, the 1 year in college or whatever. And I feel like Quickley is the best long term prospect just because he's probably the biggest. I mean, he's 6'4". You know, agile athlete for sure. He actually hit a couple threes when I assumed that shooting would be the biggest weakness of his game. With that being said, I didn't even notice Quickley was there the first day of practice because he didn't really make any plays. The second day, he was pretty good, I thought. So just based on his size, I feel like Quickley's the best long-term prospect. I like Garland, though. I mean, Garland's my guy. Quinterly's awesome, too, dude. Quinterly's got, like, Kyrie Irving-level handles. Like, he's got the ball on the string. He's really... really fun to watch. He's such a stylish player, but I just feel like Garland's a little more effective. I think that Garland's probably the best shooter. He's the most under control, and of all the point guards in the 18 class, I would take Darius Garland.
Okay. Well, I definitely like that one. I mean, I think Garland's another guy that's been in the USA circuit for a while, and you know, didn't make the U16 or U17 teams, and once again, he's still, you know, one of the smaller guards you'll see, but he's definitely grown a little bit and put on size. But in terms of his shooting ability, that's always impressed me from him, with his ability to really shoot, you know, probably from the NBA arc fairly comfortably, where, you know, you're talking about Quickley shooting and, you know, he definitely hit a few threes and it looks like he's improved that area. And, you know, he was one of the last ones in the gym, a couple of the sessions working on that shot. So you can kind of see his work ethic. But, you know, it'll be interesting at Kentucky, especially if he's kind of surrounded with not a lot of shooters. But in terms of his size, obviously, definitely agree with you on that point. And, you know, Javon Quinterly, I think size-wise and kind of how he looks reminds me of Marcus Paige. So definitely not kind of a prototypical NBA guard, but, you know, he's probably, I'd say, my favorite point guard just in terms of how he can handle
he's
the
so
ball.
So stylish.
Yeah, he kind of, you know, really catches your eye, can handle the ball, you know, still needs improvement shooting, but can definitely knock it down. But when I first saw him at City of Palms last winter, kind of really was drawn to his game. And then, you know, Trey Jones, you know, I used to not like him a whole lot when he was a few years younger, but he's definitely improved. He's a really good kind of, you know, game manager, I would say. Definitely not the point guard that his brother was at this stage, but that's kind of a tough billing to live up to. But I think in terms of being a true point guard at Duke, we'll definitely be able to step in and run the show for them next year.
Yeah. Quinn is like a playground player, man. He could be on like the and one mixtape with these fancy layups and these crossover moves. So he's great.
Philadelphia.
That'll be another
interesting subplot to follow in terms of what happens, you know, with him and with the coaching staff and what else comes out with the FBI. But kind of switching gears quickly, but staying on the USA topic, in terms of any of the younger players that kind of popped out to you. I know you wrote an article right after the camp, and Jalen Green was one of the guys you featured, but I was kind of curious who stood out to you. And I know sometimes it's hard for these guys to stand out when they're going against, you know, really in a very intense setting, against people much physically more mature than them, where somebody can be a top five player, but they could really struggle in this event at this kind of stage in their life. But anybody, you know, Jalen Green, and I was just kind of curious what your thoughts on some of the younger guys were.
Yeah, I love Jalen Green. I feel like he's combo guard, athletic, scores from three levels, finish above the rim. He's really interesting. I feel like he could be awesome. I'm trying to think of a player to compare him to. I'm struggling a little bit. His game is not like totally unique. He's basically just like an athletic combo guard who can score from anywhere, but he's really fun. He seems like a guy who could potentially be like a stud long-term, I think. So he'll be fun to watch.
Yeah.
I thought Jabri Abdur-Rahim was pretty interesting because he was the best shooter, I thought.
Yep.
That's just an anecdotal observation. I don't know if the percentages would back that up, but you know, when I'm there, I'm looking for guys who are like 6'6 to 6'9 who have ball skills and shooting ability, because that's really the way the NBA has gone. And Abdur-Rahim, like, I don't know if he's going to be a stud defensively. What's his wingspan? Maybe like 6'9. But his shooting ability is really interesting. So just in terms of wings that sort of fit that mold, I'll name him Scotty Barnes. I thought, class of 2020 kid from Texas or from Florida. I mean, he was really interesting,
yep.
But he can't shoot at all. He's very long and he's quick and long, but he can't shoot. And I thought, so, you know, some people were like praising his ball handling ability. I mean, he can handle it a little bit, but it's not like he had good ball handling ability. I didn't think, like, he's a ball of clay right now. Right. But you know, what was Kawhi Leonard when he was 15 years old? I'm sure that he was just tall, lanky guy who could move fast, but he couldn't really shoot. I don't really know what his dribbling ability was like at that point, but you know, maybe Barnes is sort of in that mold in the sense, just in the fact that he's a really good defensive prospect and a ball of clay right now. So that he was interesting. Greg Brown is another one of those guys. I thought Dudley Blackwell, who I had never heard of before, I thought he was interesting because he's, again, in that 6'6 mold guard, could handle it a little bit. He didn't look totally overmatched going against the older competition. So
yeah,
and we
terms
already
of Dudley,
about
sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, well, yeah, in terms of Dudley, I mean, he kind of caught my eye as well in terms of, you know, taking it strong to the basket. In terms of kind of those 6'6 guys you were talking about, Jalen Johnson from Milwaukee, he didn't really, definitely didn't play well the first day in kind of first USA setting and, you know, was a little more aggressive the second day, but definitely didn't stand out like I thought he might. But, you know, to me, he's still a very intriguing prospect. I got to watch him playing the 15 and under level in Vegas, and to me, his passing ability was, you know, definitely not on the level of Alonzo Ball, but in terms of probably easily the best passer in his class, but kind of one of those players that, you know, sees the play before it happens. You know, he's not a big outside shooter, but, you know, in terms of his form, it didn't look, you know, too, definitely going to be fun to watch him down the road. And then one other guy I'll mention, Xavier Foster, who I hadn't really heard of. He's a 6'10", 200 from Iowa. And, you know, watching him the first day, he didn't really do a lot, but he was intriguing just because of how tall and thin he was. But it seemed like he did have a good skill set and wasn't solely relying on his athleticism. And then day two comes down and all the 2019 and 2020 kids are playing against each other, and he has a tip dunk. And then next play, he gets another tip dunk and shatters the glass. So he stops practice. Everybody's, you know, taking photos of the backboard. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, he's playing against the seniors, and he steals a pass and just turns and, you know, fires from, you know, 4 or 5 feet behind the 3-point line and makes it. And I remember just watching the facial expression on, you know, his teammates and the rest of the kids that were watching, and they're just kind of looking at each other like, did that kid really just do that? So to me, he's definitely one to watch. Right now he's ranked number 41 on Scout, so I'm sure he'll definitely be moving up, but those are just kind of two names that jumped out to me. One
what
other
do you think
one
of wise,
was,
man?
Well, yeah, interesting you brought that up. I wanted to get your take on kind of Wiseman and Carey, because right now they're, you know, ranked the top two players in the class. And Wiseman, I think, you know, very good run and jump athlete, block shots, good finish down, nice lefty. You know, it seemed he he liked to float outside, I'd say a little too much, and he did knock some jump shots down, but we'll definitely need to kind of fine-tune that game. But in terms of a long-term, I think he definitely obviously needs to get stronger, but definitely has a bright future just given his size and athletic ability. Versus, you know, Vernon Carey, who, you know, while he does have kind of an outside game and is explosive, resembles more of kind of, I'd say, an older kind of low post player in terms of just, you know, being more of a massive down low presence. So we'll be interested to just kind of, you know, track those two as they develop, just given, you know, given their current ranking right now. But then, you know, how do they translate to college and the NBA down the road?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Wiseman for sure is the brighter long-term future just because he's more agile. And he seems like he was even trying to cross guys over with the ball in his hands. Like, who knows what happens with James Wiseman? He could just be scratching the surface of his skill level in terms of being someone who could maybe handle it out in the perimeter, or he's someone, you know, who if you're running a pick and roll or pick and dive, you know, he gets the ball. Can he make a play off that? So I think, you know, he's not there yet, but as a number one player in the class, I find him a little bit underwhelming, but I could see him being a very good NBA player for a long time just because he does sort of fit that newfangled, you know, idea of what a big man is nowadays. Whereas Carey is not exactly Marquise Bolden, for better or for worse. Like, I don't think he's got
probably
that
for
type
better.
Of skill on, well, I don't think he's got that type of skill on the low block. I know Marquise Bolden hasn't had a chance, but like if Marquise Bolden was somewhere where he got a chance to play, he'd probably be awesome. Like, I don't think Carey is quite that skilled on the low block. He's not Julia Okafor, but he's just kind of chubby, I guess. He looks chubby. His dad was, of course, an NFL tackle for the Dolphins for many years.
Yep.
But he's got some more skill than I think, you know, he just looks like a classic low post guy, but he can really shoot it. I don't think he's going to be a great rebounder, which is kind of how he reminds me of Okafor and Bolden a bit, where he's not just going to, like, jump out of the gym and grab a board. But he'll be more of an immediate impact guy on the college level, I think. Like, if you want to win the national championship in 2019, you need a big man. Vernon Carey Jr. is the guy you want.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he might be the better college player, but in terms of long term, obviously Wiseman kind of translates to that a little easier.
But here's the thing, you know, look at what, did you see Giannis yesterday, like, make that block, and he had 44 points. Like, I don't know, maybe, like, Giannis is a center now. And if Giannis is a center, then someone like Wiseman, who is more of a typical big man's game instead of a perimeter game, like, who knows? Like, the game has evolved so much just over the last, you know, 5 years, and who knows where it'll be 5 years from now. Like, maybe you're not playing anyone who's a traditional front court player who can't shoot threes and dribble the ball. But Wiseman looks good for sure. I mean, there's always going to be a place in the NBA for someone, for like traditional front court guys. But just when you see Giannis, you know, come over and block a weak side shot, Kevin Durant has done it too in the first couple games this year as well. You just wonder where the game's headed because, you know, these oversized wings, that's really where it's at. Of course, those guys are singular talents. There's only so many people ever who are going to have that kind of physicality. But it's just something to think about as you watch these long-term, when we watch these young players and think about where the game's going long-term.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the reasons I enjoy talking to you is I'd say you're more of a kind of a contrarian in terms of your approach.
No,
which I think is a good thing in terms of, you know, not just, I'd say, kind of following into, you know, this guy's ranked number one, so I think he's the best player, but kind of analyzing it in a different way. So I always kind of enjoy kind of going down that with you. And, I mean, I think that's kind of a good quick segue into just kind of some thoughts on, obviously, the rookie class this year in the NBA has started off extremely hot. But, you know, I was just taking a look at the high school class of 2014. And, you know, you can kind of go down the top 10, and it's interesting to see, you know, basically 3 years later. So, you know, you had Okafor, number one, who's kind of been, you know, rendered irrelevant in the NBA. You know, you have I can't really shoot, and he's struggling. Stanley Johnson, you know, I still think he has room to grow, but obviously struggled with his 0 for 13 performance. And then you have, you know, Towns and Turner that are, you know, obviously definitely Towns in terms of a future All-Star, but, you know, a player like Cliff Alexander, who, you know, was just kind of a big bully in high school, but didn't really have that skill level. Now he's kind of floating around the G League. So, you know, it's always interesting just to kind of see, you know, everybody that you can kind of consider a top 10 player, how they actually fare, you know, 2-3 years down the road once the level changes.
Yeah, that is interesting. You're giving me story ideas right now just as we're talking about this. But, I mean, Towns is totally legit. I mean, Towns could be one of the five best players in the world at some point. I love Towns. I feel like, you know, his year at Kentucky, they wouldn't let him shoot. They made him grow the low post game. And now in the NBA, he's basically a perimeter big man most, you know, for the most part. So he's totally legit number one. I'm looking at ESPN, had him 9 behind, you know, Tyus Jones and Cliff Alexander and Jaleel. And you just, it makes you think, like, the guys who are doing these rankings, are they ranking them based on who's going to be the most effective college player, or ranking them based on, you know, what their long-term ceiling is? Because, I mean, Jaleel Okafor deserved that number one ranking, consider the fact that Duke won the national title with him.
Yeah,
he was, you know, definitely the biggest cog in that. And, you know, Tyus Jones deserves the number 4 overall ranking, even though he looks like probably a backup point guard in the NBA. But, I mean, again, they won the national title with Tyus Jones and Jaleel Okafor, so they deserve those spots. That is pretty interesting, I think, in terms of not too many guys here looking good long-term. My Pistons friend said that Stanley Johnson looked great in that 0-for-13 game. Even he was all over the place defensively, supposedly, even though he couldn't hit a jump shot. They said he had a few that went in and out. So I'm still a believer in Stanley Johnson, but he just doesn't have sort of the vertical explosiveness to be a star, I don't think. But he could be pretty good still, and I'll go to war with Stanley Johnson every day just because I think he's a competitor. I've been really impressed with Kelly Oubre in the early part of this season, too. He's someone who, you know, physically 7-foot wingspan, real athletic, and a smooth shot. Oubre could be pretty good. And, you know, for a Wizards team that, like, needs someone on that bench to come into their own, he's the one guy with high upside who could really take them to the next level, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as a Wizards fan, I've definitely been very critical of him. I think he's definitely played extremely well to start the year and has always had kind of the intangibles in the shot, but, you know, whether it's mental or what, you just couldn't really put it together. And, you know, I'd say Kansas was a little underwhelming at Kansas, but it's always kind of had, you know, that upside. So, you know, especially for the Wizards that don't have a bench, if he can kind of transform into that sixth man, I think that'll be interesting. You know, kind of a subplot on the 2014 class, you know, I'm going to be interested to see, because all three of these guys played on the same AU program together, but Oubre, then you have Justin Jackson, and then Justice Winslow. And, you know, Winslow and Oubre, this is their third year in the NBA. Jackson, it kind of took him, you know, to his third year at Chapel Hill until he really kind of turned it on. But it's going to be interesting for me just to kind of track those players and see who has. You know, in high school, Jackson was probably considered the best. And then, you know, in college, you know, Winslow and now in the NBA, they've kind of had up and down start. So to me, that's going to be interesting to watch those three guys.
Yeah, I'm asking myself if I've already seen enough from Oubre to take him over Winslow. Winslow was really good as a rookie and then really bad as a sophomore for the Heat. I don't know, though. Like, I thought that Oubre was a great pick for the Wizards just because, like, I mean, even if it takes him till he's 24, 25, like, the mental part of the game is probably what's sort of missing from Oubre. But just that physicality, like, not many guys can match that, you know? He has a lot going for him as a prospect, I think. So I've been really impressed with what I've seen from Oubre so far. I think Moutier's looked pretty good, too. Like, Moutier was someone who, you know, when he was a high school player, you're thinking maybe this guy's a perennial all-star in the NBA. Now he looks like a bust, but at the same time, it's like you got to give these guys more, especially when they're entering the league at 19. Like, sometimes you need to give them 5-6 years to find their footing. We're a little too quick to write off these kids sometimes, I think.
Yeah, especially with him, you know, not playing in college. And I think him being under Larry Brown definitely would have been a good experience for him. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it does just take a little while longer. And, you know, I think myself and everybody else is always, you know, quick to judge whether it's, you know, the 5 stars coming into college that struggle or once they get into the NBA. But, you know, in terms of just 2 to 3 games in, it's been pretty fun to watch. You know, Lonzo almost had a triple-double. you know, Tatum's been playing well. Your buddy Markkanen is averaging a double in two games, so it's been fun to kind of watch a lot of the rookies this year so far as well.
Yep, I agree.
All right. Well, on that note, I just want to kind of end it with this one hypothetical question, which kind of gets back to college basketball and also USA. So the question is, would Sean Miller and Arizona have made the Final Four if they had Tyler Dorsey and TJ Leaf over Alonzo Trier and Lauri Markkanen? So just to kind of set the stage a little bit, going back a few years, both Dorsey and Leaf were committed to Arizona. And, you know, this will probably get, you know, probably not exactly right, but basically there was a USA U18s, I believe, which Sean Miller was helping the coach or coaching, and Dorsey got cut, and at that time he was going from a top 10 player and I think kind of plummeted down to a top 50 player. And basically it seemed like Arizona wanted Trier over Dorsey. So Dorsey decommitted, Trier committed a few weeks later, and then kind of same with TJ Leaf, he got cut from the team and decommitted, and then a little bit later they ended up with Markkanen. So to me it's kind of a fascinating question of if this year's Arizona team had Dorsey and TJ Leaf, do you think they would have gotten over that hump for Sean Miller and into the Final Four? Do you think the result, you know, whether it was Xavier or Gonzaga, if they still would have met their demise before ending up in Phoenix?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I'm kind of thinking Gonzaga still would have beat them. That Gonzaga team was really tough, and they were talented too. They were experienced. They had great guards. They had depth. So I think that Gonzaga team would have beat them, but I picked Arizona to go to the Final Four at the beginning of the tournament. So I don't know. It's a great hypothetical. I'm thinking that, you know, Leaf was a great college player, but I think Lonzo really helped Leaf. Like, Leaf probably not as talented as Markkanen, especially without a true point guard getting in the ball. And then Dorsey, he played more like Malik Monk. He was like slow Malik Monk. So he could really shoot, but he was slower. But he also didn't demand the ball. And he was a better shot maker than Trier. Trier was tougher going to the rim. Trier reminds me a bit of like Dion Waiters in terms of someone who you're just going to give him the ball and he's going to create from the top of the key in isolation and shit. And Trier killed him in that game for sure. He froze out Markkanen in the last 11 minutes, I want to say off the top of my head. I was actually interviewing DeAndre Ayton, who's going to be freshman in Arizona this year, at the McDonald's All-American game. I asked him what happened in that Arizona loss, and he's like, oh, Trier took too many bad shots, which was hilarious because they're teammates this year. And also great because athletes are typically, like, they're not telling you the truth most of the time. Why would they? But yep. He was honest, which I loved.
Yeah, Ayton will always give you a good quote.
I love that. So I'm going to say no, they would have lost to Gonzaga, but I'm guessing you think yes on this.
I kind of do, and I kind of don't. I mean, I definitely like Markkanen over Leaf. You know, I could watch Markkanen shoot a jump shot all day, every day. But I do like Dorsey, especially in college, over Trier. And I think Dorsey is just kind of a winner. So, you know, I think they would have been favored over Gonzaga, but you're right. You know, Gonzaga was really tough. They had the guards. They had the big men with Collins coming off the bench. So I think it would have been, you know, a neck-and-neck game. But I guess originally I was thinking Arizona would have with those two players, but I'm going to go that Gonzaga still would have knocked them off at the end. You know, they were too deep, too talented, and kind of too experienced for, obviously, really everybody up until the final minutes of the championship game. But still kind of an interesting subplot that, you know, includes USA basketball and a few players that were committed and later decommitted. So to me, that's just kind of another fascinating what if of the college basketball season last year.
Very good hypothetical, Sean.
All right. Well, you know, with that, definitely appreciate you coming on the first pod, and hopefully a little later down the road you can come on again once this is more of a well-oiled machine. But you know, for everybody, they should go follow you at SBN Ricky and take a look at that Zion Williamson article you wrote last week, just because I think it was a really fascinating piece on somebody that you know, we haven't really seen before. So definitely thank you for your time coming on.
Cool. Thanks, man.
All right. Talk to you later.